From KQED and the California Report, this is Capitol Notes, a weekly roundup of California politics from the state capitol in Sacramento.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals and institutions reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Capitol Notes podcast for this week that's ending November 9th. I'm John Myers from KQED and the California Report. We're back here in our studios across the street from the state capitol, and Anthony York, the married Anthony York.
Yep.
Congratulations.
Thank you, sir.
We could do a whole podcast on the marriage, the whole week.
I don't think you could, actually.
It's a different podcast. Yeah. It's for a different channel. Anthony York is back and sitting in with us today. I forced him in, dragged him in. Jordan Rao from the Los Angeles Times and their Capitol Bureau. Mr. Rao.
Glad to be here. Glad to see Anthony, who did not invite me to his wedding.
You didn't get the invite?
I did not, but just as well, since most of the people weren't able to make it because I-5 collapsed.
I didn't do it. I didn't do it.
That's the oldest excuse for getting out of a wedding.
It's blowing up a tunnel.
I couldn't get there because a truck smashed into the tunnel and blew up.
There are still hurt feelings.
I know.
But that's all right. There'll be a whole, maybe one day a slideshow or something we can put up online. The lovely nuptials. So there was a nice photo in Capitol Weekly of you and your lovely wife.
Well, I know the editor, so
yeah. You and he are close.
Yeah.
Well close. let's talk about politics and public policy, and not Anthony's home life for a moment. First and foremost, let's talk about health care, because the saga continues. What bad cliche would I have here? Life support showing signs of improvement
in the ICU. It's in the ICU.
ICU still?
Yeah, technical term.
How are the vital signs, Jordan?
Vital signs, it's sort of like that old uncle that's been in there for a long time, and you got to visit him all the time, and you're just like, you know, at some point, it's just time to pull the... No, it's not quite that point, but...
What happened this week? I mean, was it substantive?
Yeah, it was pretty substantive. I mean, they're doing the special session dance, and so... The governor put in his proposal a couple weeks ago, which made some feints towards a compromise. And then Nunez this week put in his, and, you know, without getting too wonky, you know, he made a couple of concessions on the two key issues that are sort of the hardest to find middle ground. One is the individual mandate, whether you should require everyone in California to buy insurance, even if it's really, really expensive, or if you're incredibly healthy and, you know, think that you're never going to get sick. And then the other one is how much employers should have to kick in and be required to kick in. And so, he made some motions towards the center, and Schwarzenegger made some motions to the center more recently yesterday. But there's still two big problems, I think. One is that the more they motion to the center, the less the plan actually works on paper financially. And right now, everyone's sort of winging it in that they don't actually know how much their plans add up. They're, if you remember back in when they first unrolled all their plans, they had John Gruber over at MIT calculate it up. And he's supposed to be calculating these ones up. But at this point, we don't know. And a lot of people just think that it just doesn't add up as you keep on requiring more, promising larger and larger subsidies to a larger and larger portion of the population to make the individual mandate palatable, and at the same time, you keep on saying employers have to kick in less and less, you know.
All right, well, let me see what you guys think on this. I mean, because when the Nunez-Parada amended plan came out this week, it made overtures toward this issue of everyone having insurance. It said, okay, everyone has to have insurance, but we're going to have some kind of way to determine whether or not it's affordable, and if it's not affordable, you don't have to have it. You're exempt. You get a pass. But it still, and it came down slightly on the employer fee,
right,
from a 7.5% contribution of payroll to about a 6.5%, and a sliding scale for smaller employers. But the business community still went, "Ah, don't like it." I mean, so was that really? That's not a lot of compromise,
well,
yet, was it?
And one of the big components of the Parada Nunez plan was a new $2 per pack tax on cigarettes,
right,
on tobacco products. That's going to ensure that there's a well-funded opposition, because remember, the funding mechanism still has to be approved by voters. They're still planning on getting something.
Because it can't be approved in the legislature because Republicans won't vote for a tax
increase. Get two-thirds vote for the sun rising in the east in the morning in the legislature now. So
can you repeal or can you referenda the sun?
Perhaps.
60 days.
Eclipse.
Yeah, they could recall the sun. Anyway, I'm sorry. Anyway, go ahead.
That's, I don't know. Talk to Daryl Issa about writing the check for that one. But
you know, definitely stop slow global warming.
But the tobacco companies have fought ballot initiatives in the past. They just killed the tobacco tax in Oregon on Tuesday. And, you know, there's going to be opposition to whatever. If they come to a deal, there will be opposition in November. This just ensures that opposition will be more than just Blue Cross.
Yeah, actually, that's one of the awesome things about this. As if it wasn't a tough enough hurdle to figure out a plan to insure everyone in the state of California, lately everyone's been trying to draw in more well-heeled opponents. So the governor threw out his lottery plan because, you know, when you're trying to put something through the ballot, you generally do want Indian tribes on the other side.
Right.
And now we've got the tobacco companies. But just to quickly go back to the main point about the employer fee, it's actually the top number, the 6.5-7%, isn't really what the negotiations are about and what's going to change the business community. It's what you're going to require the smaller employers to kick in. Because like the restaurant associations, if they're able to get most of their members exempted or such a low amount that they don't mind, it's possible that they could go neutral on this. And the large companies, most of them actually provide health care, frankly, at a much larger amount than any of this, usually around 13%. So they're not going to have a problem with this, and then maybe the chamber could go neutral. So that's where the dance is right now. It's with the smaller employers.
And what do you think the issues are on the left side of the aisle at this point? Do you think the labor consumer consortium is any happier with that? Well, actually, I'm sure they don't like any kind of individual mandates, probably, but right. Will they be mollified at all by what they got in that exemption if it's too expensive?
It really is like the question. It's a great question. And they are, I mean, they're grudgingly okay right now with Nunez's proposal, but, you know, they're going to have a lot of complaints about it if he goes much further towards the governor. And that's the problem is that's been the problem the whole time is the governor can only go so far to the left without totally this is a podcast, so pissing off the employer community.
Yes, we'll let you say that.
Thank you. And the Nunez can only go so far to the right without, you know, doing an equus on the labor community.
In which case, the question is how, you know, is the elasticity enough to get those two in the middle? You know,
right.
Can you stretch it?
And you can
enough,
get
right?
them to the middle, but then when you get them to the middle, there's not enough money because, again, you're subsidizing everyone up the wazoo. And you're letting all employers off the hook. So, you know, there you go. But then, of course, the answer is just use the general fund because that's only $10 billion in debt.
Right. That also made things a lot easier this week, the announcement that, the revelation that we're expecting a $10 billion deficit come January. So.
And that, yeah, and that's a good point. I mean, quickly on that issue, I'm trying to figure out how that plays because there's this whole spin motion in the Capitol to say, oh, don't lump together general fund budget problems with health care. You know, one, health care needs to be solved now before things get worse. And then health care is a self-contained unit out of the budget. It's not really anything. But at the same time, I mean, everything's intertwined economically and fiscally. And I mean, you know, it's an interesting PR move to try to say, oh, don't attach those two. But
the two linchpins for the health care plan for the funding are basically the federal government, which, you know, for the federal match, that's which is another source of funds that some have questioned whether that will actually be there, given what the federal government is doing on children's health now, the Healthy Families programs statewide or nationwide, and the employers, basically. And so depending on which plan you go on. So every time you lower the employer piece, if you don't replace it with something, whether it's a tobacco tax or, you know, there's been some talk of a sales tax to pay for it, I think that there will be a state piece that, I mean, some of this has got to come out of the general fund, doesn't it?
Yeah, because it not only does it affect the general fund, but one of the dirty little secrets is that everyone that's been penciling out these plans, it's only for 1 year, and the reality is a lot of these plans aren't going to play out as healthcare costs keep on going up, maybe just a couple of years. So it's a huge problem. And I think that the governor's office is going to launch sort of a counteroffensive and try and argue that if they don't do something to bring costs under control on healthcare, then the state's fiscal problems are going to be even worse. But the problem with that is that the cost control stuff that everyone is banding about, one, isn't that strong, and two, is going to take a lot longer than a couple of years to kick in.
Well, and the other problem with that argument, too, if that happens, I mean, I can see that. It's a great PR strategy to say, you know, we're going to make the fiscal problems of the state worse. But, you know, with all due respect to the governor's office, I think they have a bit of a weak spot in their fiscal restraint in the budget as it is. I mean, governor has not fought for fiscal prudence in that budget in several years. And so it's kind of hard to say, you know, to start sanding out this clarion call that, you know, look at all these problems that could happen and we're trying to protect the budget, when there are lots of people who are out there, you know, criticizing the administration that they've let anybody spend whatever they want to spend in that budget, you know, in recent years. So,
yeah, I sort of feel like this year has been it's like a movie Memento, where it's like the entire Schwarzenegger administration going backwards in time. And so you sort of had, you know, with the budget crisis and him unable to get it, you know, anything through, you sort of had and then the water stuff, it was back to like 2005 with the special election that just, you know, went nowhere. And now with the budget problems, it's going back to when he first came into office and there was a huge deficit.
Well, and
any further, and he's going to be back, you know,
he'll be back in
like
movies,
lifting weights or, yeah, exactly, doing translations for people on the beaches of Venice.
Well, and so I guess, you know, in some way of just trying to back up and look at this issue, then, without the specifics of health care, we get at the end of the year, we don't have a deal on health care. The governor has clearly made it, put it out there in the Capitol community that next year is the year of education, 2008. So he wants to talk education. We're not done with health care. The budget's a mess. I mean, it looks like a crash on the 405. I mean, it's ugly. It's just, it's all, you know.
Well, even if he does do, if they do get a health care deal, they've got a real, as they like to say, in the buildings that have, no offense to your building, but much more plush carpeting in the third house, he has a real messaging problem, because he's going to be asking everyone to approve this ballot measure in November at the same time that the whole year is going to be about the state fiscal crisis. Yeah. And that's going to make people much more receptive, voters much more receptive to the message of be careful about grand new spending plans. Hmm. So, but, you know, fortunately, he'll only have possibly the Indians, the business community, and the tobacco companies against him. So it's, you know.
Yeah.
Slam
dunk.
Well, let's talk about ballot politics a little bit to transition to the other topic we were going to talk about this morning. I don't want to say unusual because it's not actually true. Expected development somewhat among political watchers, right, in the term limits issue this week. It was telegraphed for a while, right, that Insurance Commissioner Steve Poizner, the only ranking statewide Republican constitutional officer other than the governor, throwing his support on the side of no modifications to term limits.
Well, the support isn't new. What's new is the $1.5 million he's pledged to spending to defeat this initiative, Proposition 93, on the February ballot. Poizner co-authored some of the ballot arguments against Prop 93, so his opposition is well known. He was he chipped in. I don't remember the dollar figure. I know it was at least six figures, maybe seven, in favor of Proposition 77 in 2005.
The redistricting initiative.
The redistricting initiative.
He headed that campaign, right?
And he did. And it's following the same model where instead of giving money to the existing campaign, he forms a new campaign. He's the head of it. And he was in those commercials. He was in those television commercials.
Of course, he did lose that.
He did. He didn't. But this is an opportunity for him to embrace an issue that has strong support among the Republican base. And, you know, Poizner is a moderate, you know, has given money to Al Gore in the past and has some problems with his base, such as it is. But he I'm sure, will be starring in TV commercials this winter, trying to and basically declaring war on Fabian Nunez and Don Parada. And everybody expects that this is the beginning of the process of Poizner introducing himself to Republican voters and to California voters in run-up of a gubernatorial run in 2010.
Given he's really the only guy out there other than Tom McClintock. I mean, you know, and Tom McClintock widely perceived to be unelectable statewide because he's too conservative. I mean, so...
And Poizner unelectable in a Republican primary. So, you know, deal with that one. I mean, it's the age-old problem for the Republican Party. The only reason that Schwarzenegger may not have been able to get through a Republican primary, but
right,
there was none in the recall. So.
I was just somewhat underwhelmed by the Steve Poizner money announcement, and I guess because unless he's really willing to open his wallet a lot, the million and a half is a drop in the bucket at this point, especially when you've got all the forces that Speaker Nunez and Senator Parada and all of them have aligned, the traditional interest groups, who are going to funnel money into the Yes campaign.
Well,
right?
It's a down payment. I mean, his $1.5 million comes in connection with $1.5 million from U.S. Term Limits, the Virginia-based organization that has opposed modification and actually sponsored the original term limits law in 1990 out here. And the $3 million that they put up now means that the two sides are equal, that in the account that Nunez has set up for the, or I guess it's not Nunez officially, but that the Yes on 93 folks have set up, there's about $3 million in the bank. The two are now equal. Nunez has about $5 million in his personal account that he could spend on this effort. He's expected to spend some of that. And Poizner has said at the press conference this week that this is not the end of what he's willing to spend. He'll spend whatever it takes.
They always say that. They always say that they'll spend whatever it takes.
This is a guy who spent $6 million, $7 million on a losing campaign for state assembly in 2004, which is unprecedented and unheard of and not advisable.
Another example of throwing good money after bad. But, I mean, how much money do they even have to put up to kill this thing?
Yeah,
I mean, it seems like it's – you know, if they can just get their message out, it seems like it's going to have a tough time passing.
Yeah,
anyway.
I think we saw there was a field poll last week. We saw that a lot of the support for this measure is based on a lot of confusion about what the measure actually does. A lot of people who are supporting Prop 93 believe that it's punitive, that it's something that punishes legislative leaders, when in fact it's something that they're sponsoring and pushing for. And that's because of the way the title and summary were written by the Attorney General. Incidentally, the Attorney General who may very well be running against Poizner for governor in 2010, Jerry Brown. I think that Jordan's right. I think, you know, the $3 million will go a long way in sort of getting the information out there on basically on what Prop 93 does. And once it does, I think that the proponents are going to have a really hard time getting it through in February.
Well, and when you just think about raising money in February, I mean, you could make the argument that I mean, we've said this, I think, before when we were talking. It's not incredibly smart piece of analysis, but there's a lot of places to spend your money if you are a powerful political group come February 2008. There are candidates for president who are soliciting money in California. There's the referendums that that come out. I mean, there's a lot of places that money could get spent. And so if you're the Yes on 93, Yes, modify term limits campaign, you've got a lot of people who might be spending their money elsewhere.
Well, and, you know, there's a presidential campaign going on in February. Keep in mind, candidates under federal law, candidates get bargain basement prices when it comes to television advertising. Initiatives don't. So there's going to be a big crowd on the airwaves, assuming that the presidential primaries are still competitive here in February. And people who are pushing ballot initiatives in February, particularly 93, seems to be the only one that has any money behind it on either side, they're going to have to spend a lot of money. And so that $3 million isn't going to go as far as it would in, say, that it would have in June, say.
So would I surmise correctly, Mr. York, that you think that the Poizner announcement with money and endorsement was a big development?
Yeah, I think it's significant. I think, you know, there were questions about, I think a lot of us who watch this stuff assumed that Prop 93 could be defeated if there was going to be funded opposition. There was some question about whether that funded opposition was ever going to materialize. And lo and behold, I mean, I think that what the Poizner announcement signifies is that there will be a very well-funded opposition.
How much is this going to endear him to the base, though, come the general election? I mean, how much
got to help, though, doesn't it?
Do people remember when they're voting for governor? My sense is Steve Poizner could spend a gazillion dollars in a closed Republican primary. Tom McClintock can spend the 12 cents that he's able to raise and probably beat Poizner by 20 points.
Exactly, but, because of the conservative ideology of the party, yeah, of party faithful.
So, but, you know, can't hurt, right? And if the guy really is worth $1 billion, I mean, you know, $1.5 million is a drop in the bucket. I mean, what does it matter?
What did you think of the political sniping this week where the Lieutenant Governor John Garamendi tried to make an issue of the fact that Poizner was talking about ballot initiatives instead of helping people down in the wildfires, you know, with all due respect to the Lieutenant Governor, who also wants to run in 2010 as a gubernatorial candidate?
And Poizner was there with Bush and Schwarzenegger, during in the wake of the wildfires. He's the lieutenant governor. What else can I say?
Well, but in not in defense, but first of all, that was a nice coordinated campaign attack because that's what Nunez said too. So that's clearly on the talking points of the Democrats. But right. I mean, the fact is that right around when the gubernatorial election is coming, we're going to be at the point where people are going to be potentially really, really unhappy with their insurers from the fires. And so if that doesn't go smoothly, if it goes as badly as it did back in 2003 with the wildfires, then the opponents, the Democrats, are going to have a pretty handy weapon to use against Poizner. That's what
I was pondering. I was pondering that. I was thinking about that.
I can go, talk about
what
it
the
more.
Weapon might actually look like. What the might feel like be, in your hands.
It would probably be a flaming ember, I think, or perhaps some part of a flaming piece of wood.
Wood.
Yes, something like that. Or perhaps a fire truck being driven very quickly towards Steve Poizner and $1 billion and a fire truck. I don't know.
These are the things that keep you up at night.
I don't stay up at night.
It's actually just your child that keeps you up at night.
And in the morning.
Well, I guess we'll wrap it up here. Something that we don't often do, but looking forward to next week. What are you guys watching out for? What kinds of things? Anthony, what's in the Capital Weekly next week? But no, what are you guys looking out for?
Not a whole lot going on. I mean, watching healthcare, obviously, and countdown to Thanksgiving here.
Yeah, really.
There's a little education thing we're looking at. It's kind of slow season here, and I think that. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see when the campaigns actually fire up. In February, voters are going to be starting to vote in January. So I don't know if we're talking after Thanksgiving, whether these campaigns start for the ballot initiatives and start seeing some presidential right. advertising out here.
Right. It
might be coming soon.
Yeah. I will tip my hat just because I think that we can all, keep things quiet among our, this is a small group of
the seven faithful, people who listen to the podcast,
faithful listeners on their iPods. But one of the things that's happening next week is the administration is going to give semi-final or final approval to some new regulations regarding hospitals and seismic safety, and that's HAZUS. And that's a big deal. Basically, in a nutshell,
is that an acronym?
It is, isn't it? Excellent, HAZUS.
What does it stand for?
Good Lord.
Come on. You're the healthcare reporter at the LA Times.
It says Hospital Administrating Zoological Underbrush Systems.
And seismic safety.
Right, exactly. I have absolutely no idea, and I don't want to know. I don't even know if it's HAZUS or HAZUS.
Fair enough.
But basically what this does is the hospitals have found a new way to put some more time before they have to meet requirements passed after the Northridge earthquake that they have to be seismically safe, i.e. not collapse when there is a earthquake. And this latest way is they're going to use new methodology to determine whether they collapse by testing the ground underneath. And basically the argument is, even if your hospital isn't, propped up all that well, if the ground beneath it is solid and is not likely to be on a fault line, say, then you don't have to meet a deadline of 2013 to fix up your hospital. You get some more time.
And this is a big issue for those hospitals. I mean, they are often talking about seismic retrofitting issues and their concerns over how it's going to play out.
Billions of dollars you're talking about.
A study in January from RAND put it at about $110 billion to retrofit all these hospitals. And there actually probably aren't enough construction people in the state of California that could do it if it was all done simultaneously. So about 50 to 60% of the hospitals that are now designated as very likely or most likely to smush you while you lay in a bed after you've been brought there because you were injured in an earthquake will get a little reprieve under this.
I don't know which to be more impressed by, your ability to vamp on that as long as you just did or the drawings that you're
Aren't
doing.
Aren't they awesome?
Down there.
We'll be posting them on the
website. I was actually going to tell people that I'm the only one not drawing in here. Yeah. Jordan has done about 17 post-its during this podcast of different little interpretive Dali-esque.
Is that one Adam Mendelsohn there?
It is, but you know what? You see the little, he has a shrunken head because there's been a voodoo thing going on. But actually, a little secret is that I can't talk unless I'm also writing. And I can't type a story. I type through my toes, so I have to take my shoes off. So I have slippers in the office, which at least one other person in the Capitol does, because I write from the bottom all the way up.
with feeling.
I'm somewhat stunned and at a loss of words for trying to. I've got nothing with that. That's impressive.
Thank you.
And Anthony's scribblings were very small, so Jordan clearly wins the scribbling award.
Scribblings. I can't believe I spent that much on my wedding.
I brought
all the zeros.
I brought no post-its. All right. If you want to see the scribblings, email me. Maybe we'll find a way to put them online.
Unlikely.
That'll do it for this podcast. Jordan, thank you for your insight and your scribbling.
Always a pleasure to be here and my favorite of 18 NPR stations in the capital area.
Ay, ay, ay. I'll let that go. For Anthony York and Jordan Rao, I'm John Myers from KQED. We'll see you next time.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Acura, featuring the TL Type S with a 286-horsepower V6 and real-time traffic alerts. Learn more at Acura.com.